Hey guys, I'm Rich and I'm an alcoholic. Nervous as hell right now. Haven't spoke here in a while. I haven't been in this meeting in 5 months now, but it's good to see you guys. This group means a lot to me. You know, when I was going through a tough time around 8-9 months sober, I needed a group that was enthusiastic and people that were active in recovery, and this place here was it for me. So anytime I can give back, I'm willing to do that, even though I don't want to. You know, I liked what Osa said. Thank you for speaking about the service work, because that's what I did when I first came in here. I threw myself into service work. I would pick up cigarette butts. I didn't care. I just didn't want to be around people. I'm like, don't look at me. Don't talk to me. But, you know, I knew I was doing something that was out of myself. And actually, that's how I started to engage in conversations with people, become more social, learn to have fun in sobriety, to, you know, because when I was drinking, that's the only way I knew how to socialize. I started drinking at early in high school at the age of 14, and I was always pretty awkward, and the only way that made me feel comfortable is doing things that were active, like sports. I like playing baseball. I like the, you know, being competitive with things like that. But when we're alone speaking like this, I'm like, oh my God, I'm terrified. You know, I still am at times, and it's gotten a lot better. But so I guess my sobriety date is May 11, 2008, so I just celebrated 6 years. I got a new home group. This used to be my home group. It's the men's meeting on Bruce B. Downs. Both this place and that place have been a big part of my recovery. And then also, you know, I sponsor people, and I'm sponsored. So around the age of 14, I had my first drink, or first time getting drunk, let's say, because I think I tried beer before that, but I didn't really like it at first. And I remember I had a party and went to a Catholic school, and all the kids in the private or in public schools found out I was having a party for some reason. I have no clue how, but this guy that I knew bought Sky Vodka, and you know, I chugged it out of the bottle, and I felt like, whew, finally, you know, I can be myself. Like, I don't give a shit what you think about me. I can have fun. I can be this goofball that I am, and you know, I can hit on girls. I can do whatever. I can be, you know, comfortable in my own skin. You know, I remember. I still can vividly see what was going on at that place. People were telling stories. I was talking about transferring schools so I can go to the public school, and you know, I ended up hooking up with two girls, and like, you know, I was like, this is what drinking's about. Yes. I'm like, so, you know, I'm like, I'm hearing myself, and I'm like, man, I sound like a pervert. But that's how I was when I drank. You know, when I drank, I was not, you know, I was just this creepy dude, and like, I thought, you know, I was cool, but like, you know, I used to hear stories, and they're like, man, you're crazy when you drink. You're like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. You know, you're this nice guy, kind of shy, awkward, but then when you drink, you're like, whoa, this beast comes out, and like, people are like, what the hell? And like, if you get to know me, you know that I am a crazy dude, and like, that's kind of like my true nature, I believe. But like, alcohol gave me that ability to be, you know, to just be okay with who I was. You know, I got in trouble for drinking by my parents. I was grounded, and you know, that didn't deter me. I was like, from that point on, I'm going to try to get alcohol as much as I can, because I want that feeling as much as I can. I want that ability to not care what you think. I want that feeling of just like, euphoria. You know, I had outside consequences, but I wasn't having any internal consequences at this point. So I drank a few more times that year. It was kind of hard to get booze. The only way I usually got it was stealing my parents' liquor from their cabinet. And You know, I did convince my parents to transfer me over to the public school because I was like, you know, I know these guys drink a lot, so I'm gonna hang with these fellas. And I ended up going to the public school, and that's where my drinking progressed. I was able to meet friends that had older brothers, and they were able to get the beer on the weekends, the liquor, and I ended up just loving drinking. You know, all that, I can't remember all the details, like, it's hard to go back, but I can remember that it just consumed my every thought, my every action. My grades decreased. I was usually pretty good in school, and at this point, grades just declined, and athletics. I played baseball, but really I didn't give a shit. I was just like, I want to, drink after the ball games. I want to hang with the guys that we play ball, but I don't want to hang out with them on the field. I want to hang out with them at the slates. That's where we partied at. I want to be at the keg party. That's what I remember. It's pretty much a blah of what happened because I was a blackout drinker from pretty early on. Some other consequences that happened during my drinking. I just remember, I'm talking to my dad today, like telling him I'm speaking and I'm nervous and like we got this real good relationship today. But back then, you know, I didn't give a shit what my parents thought. I thought they were these evil people that were trying to keep me down, you know. They were not, they didn't want me to have fun, you know. I'm like, what? I'm just doing this because it's fun to drink, you know. You did it, Dad. You know, I tried to be real persuasive in that. And I was just thinking, you know, I get this horrible feeling when I think, like this shame and guilt, like for the things I did, you know. I was real manipulative. I put a knife to my head one time and said, I'm going to kill myself, you know, if you don't let me drink. And just crap like that, like, you know, stuff that like my parents didn't know what to do at that time. I knew what I was doing. I wanted to get more booze. I wanted to not get in trouble. I wanted to be able to hang out with my friends and drink the way I wanted to drink. So I remember drinking progressed a lot more during that time. The consequences were getting worse. Kind of surprised my parents didn't send me to treatment then. they told me, but I told them, oh, I'm going to stop. I'm not going to drink like I've been drinking, and that's just a phase. You know, it was spring break, so that's why I was drinking so much during that time. But things got worse. Around my senior year, my mom took off to work in Philadelphia, and I was drinking daily at this point. I was drinking. I was going to school. I was still able to go to school, but like, and that's part of the reason why I didn't think I was an alcoholic, because like an alcoholic doesn't still go to school. They leave school. They drop out. And you know, I still had it in the back of my head that, you know, my core value of like education is important, and my parents taught me that. And for some reason, I still kept going, but you know, it wasn't to the potential that I had. And I know we hear that a lot here. Drinking got like progressively worse. It got to the point where I was drinking and driving, daily drinking. So another way I was able to was relationships. I was able to use the relationships. I'm like, if this girl wasn't such a, you know, a biatch, then I would not have to drink this way. Like, you know, she's the one that, you know, she's the one that is making me drink this way. And I truly believe that to my core, that this is, you know, because of this person. So I used all those defense mechanisms, like blaming others, like it was never my fault. So same old stories there. I remember just being real depressed, not wanting to live, and I was like, college is the answer. I need to go far away from this girl as I can be, and that is the solution. College is when I tried some controlled drinking, tried some different things. There was a period of time where I didn't drink for a week. I was like, if you don't drink for a week, that means you're not an alcoholic. And, I got into other drugs, and I started smoking weed daily. I was like, you know, if you if You know, because like when you smoke weed, you can just chill. You don't. It's not a big deal. But when you drink, like crazy stuff happens. You know, you do some real awkward stuff that you regret the next day. So, marijuana, that never happened to me. But the thing is, when I was smoking weed, then, you know, I came to this point where, it was just hard for me to do anything, and also, eventually, it led to drinking because then I found out I could drink and smoke weed. So, my tolerance increased over time. When college hit, a lot of the same story, you know, a lot of blackouts, a lot of drinking and driving, a lot of, you know, shitty things that happen. I still remember being a pretty anxious person at that point. I really, when I really started to see a personality change is when I started to really get, like, angry when I drank. Like, I would break things, and I'd want to fight people, and, like, you know, that's not my nature. Like, I wasn't raised that way. I come from a real kind, loving family, and they didn't teach us to fight, like, growing up. And, like, you know, I didn't even see that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, when I was drinking, I'd like to, like, make like I was a hard ass, but, like, I was such a puss. You know, I really was. But, like, you know, I'd get these beer muscles and slam bottles and just think I was a tough guy and talk a lot of smack. And, you know, it was just, it wasn't my true nature, like I said. And, so same story. Some things that happened that really changed my course, my direction in life were when I went to my junior year, and there was like a period of time, like a short period of time where a lot of crazy things happened, and I was like, wow, this isn't normal. I ended up crashing into a house. Like a parked car was in the driveway, and I was going down the wrong way down a one way, and I sped up. And, like, I vaguely remember, but, like, I just remember just crashing this car into the house and, like, getting out and running. And I'm like, you know, like, and I didn't know what to do. I'm just like, oh, my God. I'm just, like, running, and I'm like, wait a minute, my car's in the house. So I'm like, they're going to know. I remember, the only thing I remember about that is being in the ambulance. They have me strapped on, and I'm like, Mom! You know, I'm crying my eyes out, like, you know, like, I don't know if I'm being manipulative, I'm scared, you know, I'm drunk, and I just remember, like, you know, the one thing that still hits me today is I never want to disappoint my mom, and, you know, those are the kind of things that hit me still in the heart. You know, when I think back to the shit I did to my mom, it tears me up. And it's better than it was because I know I live a different life, but still, there's still a part of me that's like, and I think it's good to have that feeling of shame and that part of it. Like, not to live in it, but to have some of it because it reminds me of where I was. And I don't want to go back to that place, you know. So that happened. Also, was found naked on a couch. I think I pissed my pants, so I can relate to you. Like, and I ended up, naked and probably creeped out some girls and I don't even remember where I ended. I think I was in a hospital. My friend came and picked me up, and he's like, what the hell's wrong with you? You're a wacko. Like, and this guy drank pretty heavy, too. Like, he's like, something's wrong with you, man. And again, you know, I had to tell my mom, and like again, you know, with the tears and the sadness and the shame and the guilt, and you know, it was a rough time in my life. I didn't know what was wrong. Like, I thought it was all outer circumstances. Like, if I mean, once I get the education, when I get the degree, then I'll get the car, then I'll get the house, then I'll get the wife, then I'll get, you know, the kids, and I'll be fine. All that stuff, you know, is gonna fix me. And I always tried something, but it never worked. So there was a few more things that happened all within that few months period, and I was like, listen, I got to go to a different state. That is the solution. I need to get away from Buffalo. The cold weather sucks. The women suck here. My friends suck here. They hook up with the girls that I like. You know, and I'm going to go down south. So we went on spring break down here to Tampa and at one point, and called up some people I met down here, and I was like, you know, guide me to, you know, the nearest, like, cool place that's happening where I could drink a lot and party. And so I found that place, and but the thing was, a lot of weird things were happening physically, too. I'd wake up with bruises on my body and, like, black eyes, and I didn't know where this stuff was coming from. And so what I decided to do, more controlled drinking. I stopped for about a month, got a liver test done, and I was like, okay, I'm good. But the thing is, during this month period of time, I didn't know what to do, like what I was talking about with the socializing. I didn't know how to hang out without drinking. And I'd hang out, you know, with my roommates and that, but I was like, you guys don't even know who I really am. Like, you know, wait till I start partying, and then, you know, the real me will come out, and we're going to have parties here, and it's going to kick ass. And, you know, so after that period of time, I met a lot of people again, and drank like I normally did, and it was there was some fun. But, you know, I'm not in AA because I had fun. So, you know, progressively it went back to like just like my story in high school, a lot of blackout drinking, except it got a lot worse. I ended up getting a DUI, blowing like a 0.26 or 0.27 or something. Not even remembering getting a DUI. So I was real impulsive and a real danger, you know, when I drank. Like, you couldn't really predict what was going to happen. And that was a scary thing. And that's still probably some of the reason I'm still sober, because, I mean, there's a lot more to it. I'll get to that. But really, that's scary, like, not to know what's going to happen when you drink. Like, you know, I was definitely headed for, like, prison or jail. And, you know, my sponsor now, you know, he was in prison. And, you know, when I first came here, I'd be like, you're not like me, you know. You ended up in prison and that. And he would, like, bring it to, you know, didn't you do cocaine? Didn't you drink and drive and, like, almost kill someone? Didn't you do this to your girlfriend? And he's like, you could be in prison for that, too. So, like, I'm like, damn it, you're always right, you know. And so it was tough. Like, you know, if you're here right now, try to relate to people. Try to, instead of comparing, try to identify your story with something else. If you don't hear anything from me, like the background, the way I look, anything like that, it don't matter. We're all alcoholic, and you know, so try to identify with the feelings, the thoughts, stuff like that, the disease type thinking. Because I almost ran myself out. Like, it's a miracle that I'm still here. And I'm grateful that I still am sober today. So I got that DUI. So the next solution was, I got to have a girlfriend. I haven't had a girlfriend in a while, and she could take care of me. And so I found the girlfriend, and, you know, she was a sweetheart, and you know, she drove me around, basically like a cab driver, and, like, you know, I'm not proud to say those kind of things. She didn't deserve that. And eventually I met my now wife, and you know, just so much feeling when I think about how I got here. I met my first sponsor by doing a project. I was in grad school at this point, and I had to do a project where I interviewed an alcoholic, and this alcoholic turned out to be my first sponsor. And, you know, I was like, I relate to this guy a lot. I'm like, holy shit, it scared me. And, you know, he liked playing ball, he liked females, and he liked drinking the way I like to drink. And so he gave me the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he told me to read the doctor's opinion. And I definitely did not read it. It took, you know, some more consequences. It took some more research going out there and drinking and figuring out if I really was an alcoholic, which I'm grateful that I did. It sucks that I have a few things, you know, probably on my record now, but, I mean, I really had to go that far in my life to get where I'm at today, to believe that I'm an alcoholic. You know, because there was no denying the fact that I was an alcoholic when I came here. You know, all this stuff that I read in the big book about the phenomenon of craving and the mental obsession, that was right nailed dead on to who I was, that phenomenon of craving. Once I start, I can't stop. My dad used to always tell me, you know, why don't you just drink one beer? Why don't you have two beers, you know, and just put it down? And I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll try that. And it never worked. It never worked. Like, once I start, I don't stop. And maybe there's a few times where I was so sick to my stomach, I might have had one beer, or I drink half a beer, and then... But about 99% of the time, once I started, you know, it was off to the races. So I met this sponsor, and I eventually called him after a night of just crazy drinking. I told my my cousin that I'm slowing down now. I'm not drinking as much as I used to. I'm in my internship. I'm trying to, you know, man up, grow up, mature up, whatever you want to call it. And you know, we went out 2 days in a row, and the one night I don't remember, and I was naked again. Always naked. I don't know why. So weird. My clothes drop when I get drunk. It's a good thing, you know, I don't drink no more. It's pretty embarrassing stuff, you know. Sounds funny, but when you wake up, you're like, what the fuck? You know, you're just like, oh, jeez, again? Dumbass. Like, you just... And the day after that, I'm just like, okay, I feel like crap. Let's pick up the bottle. I found a pool party by where I lived and picked up that bottle of vodka, and I drank it like, you know, it was water. And, you know, I did some real awful things to my now wife, you know, said some real awful things, and I can remember it, and oh, it sucks. You know, I can't believe those things I did. And what happened was the next morning I called my mom like I do, and said, this is it, you know, I can't drink. I can't drink no more like I've been. I'm going to go to AA. And she was just like, okay, whatever you got to do. She was just like, my mom's always just cared about what was best for me. She never, you know, I never felt judged by my mom. I always felt this unconditional love like I guess mothers do for their kids when they're good mothers. And, you know, Kaylee, my now wife, is supporting me as well. And I called that sponsor, and he met me at a meeting at the old school group. And, you know, I shared what I did, and I broke down and I cried. And other men that were like me, like, you know, guys in ties and button-downs and looked like they had families and good jobs, and they shared. I did that too. And, you know, I remember just feeling at peace. I was like, oh, man, these, you know, this is great. This is where I need to be. But it wasn't smooth from that point on, let's just say, you know. That was the last time I took a drink. That was May 11th, 2008. So during that first, you know, 8 to 9 months, I really did listen to what my sponsor said. But the thing is, I look back now, a lot of what I would do is I would not tell him everything. Like, for example... when I was 3 months sober, I went out. Kaylee was turning 21, and they were all going out to the bar, and all my friends were out, and I took shots of, like, Red Bull or whatever while they're doing that. And, like, I didn't tell them about that, but at the end of the night, when everyone's drunk and that, and barfing on my car as the DD, you know, I'm like, I want to kill people. And I'm just so miserable, and I'm grateful I didn't drink at that time. My mom was in town. I felt like she was, like, my angel at that point. But I would do these things, and then I would call him the next day, and he'd be like, why didn't you tell me about that? And I'm like, because, you know, I already made my mind up. I was going to go. You know, I didn't want to hear what he had to say. So I did those things. And, you know, when people, it's so funny when I tell these stories now when I'm sponsoring people, I tell them not to do these things. And, like, I did the same stuff. You know, and I guess, you know, I never thought of that as dishonesty or lying, but it is by omission. You know, and I did work this, you know, the one other thing that really helped me, like what you talked about earlier, was service work. I'd chair a meeting every Sunday night. A few times I wanted to drink, like on the weekend, and I'm like, wait a minute, I got to chair that meeting. I don't want to go there drunk or whatever. I don't know why. Like, I thought for some reason in the beginning, like once you came in, you couldn't like drink, or you were like going to be stopped by the police or, you know, the AA police. I don't know. I really don't know. Like, or maybe I came to a point where it was just like, there's no turning back now. You know, I really want to give this a shot, because when I've done things in my life, I've never went fully out unless it's something I, you know, really, really wanted. Usually I would start things and then just quit. And I think that's why this holds a place in my heart so much, because I haven't given up since I've been here. This stuff works. Jim, man, I've been thinking about him, my first sponsor lately. I think he's got like 9 or 10 years. He moved away around 8 months, and he was like my higher power at first. I didn't talk to many people. I sat in the back of the rooms, and I probably judged a lot, and you know, was quiet, anxious. Like, I'd look at people's outsides and say, you know, I'm not like them. Maybe if someone was positive and I liked hearing their message, I'd be like, oh, okay, right on. But then if I hear something I didn't like, you know, I'm like, fuck this place. And but he moved away, and I was, you know, I was probably on like step 8 or 9, and I was like, really, do I really want to do this? I don't know if I want to do this sobriety thing no more. This is too tough. Like, this is real deal. Like, I was at a stuck point. And I ended up calling Chip from the old school group, and he was just like, I don't know, for some reason I liked his enthusiasm, and I really could connect with him. And he was just telling me, man, once you go back, it's like the devil, man. He's like, you go back and it sucks you back in. And he was just like talking like that. He's like, yeah, brother. And I was just like, oh, yeah, man. I don't know, for some reason I listened to him, even though now I listen to him and I love him, but he's crazy. But he really could hold my attention, because like what he said came from his heart. Like, he really meant what he was saying. He loves sobriety. I just sat next to him in a meeting the other day, and I'm like, I always think of like how many times he helped me in the beginning. I'm so grateful. So he ended up connecting me with some young person, and this person, I felt like at that point, you know, I'm not gonna drink tonight. I'm gonna stick it out tonight. Kaylee knew at that time too, because I was like, I can't do this no more. I was like, I'm going to get, you know, a 12-pack. I'm gonna go get some beer, because I can't do this shit no more. And that's when I called Chip. And so, like, you know, at that moment, that was probably the closest I came to drinking. And at this point, I was like, you know, I can't do this no more. Just kind of doing, you know, I'm doing this. I'm still working the steps, and I'm, you know, I'm chairing a meeting. So I got some things, but there are certain areas where I need to take some work. So when he left, I ended up coming here to YPG, and you know, I remember the table. I think it was around, I don't know, it's moved around so much, but anyways, you know, Stephen, who's my sponsor, was sitting there, and you know, it was just like, you know, he reached out his hand and said, you know, welcome to AA. And like, there's something about him that I liked, the way he carried himself, the way that, you know, it seemed like he cared as well. And also, Ryan was here, and, you know, I really was like, I don't know, I feel like God puts in the right people when you're ready at that time, because I came to this meeting in the beginning a few times, and I sat in the back, and I left before, you know, and I'm glad you guys announced that there's places to go after, because, you know, I was too scared, like, I didn't know what was going on after, and I'm like, no one likes me. I'm like, they're not telling me where it's at. And like, it's really because I'm just so uncomfortable and impatient. That, like, you know, I can't stay and just hang out. Like, I'm like, I gotta go. Like, so I came to that meeting, and I went out to eat, and I really just threw myself in. I engaged, and, you know, for, you know, after I got a year, it got harder. They're like, I remember some people at the watch, they were saying, you know, now the real work happens. And I was like, yeah, a few. You know, like, I'm like, this is, you know, I've got this far. This is great. I think it was Eric V. And, like, it would just piss me off when people wouldn't say, I wanted, like, all this pats on the back and validation. And you guys didn't give me that. And, you know, I'm grateful for that. You know, but, I mean, you gave me, if I was down, you wouldn't kick me when I'm down, but you would. But if, you know, if my ego's in the way, you would tell me, you know, you would tell me what's up. Yeah, at this point, I remember I'm hanging out with everybody. I'm going to, you know, Sarasota to speak. I'm hanging out with my sponsor. He's speaking at places. you know, he's helping the new guy. The one thing that always did help me, and it still does help me, is to help the new person. You know, I actually texted Monica before this meeting today, and, you know, she used to sit in front and she'd smile, and, like, that helped me. Like, I like seeing her face, and you know, I guess it gave me that validation, like, you could do this. And, you know, so I sent her a text, and she's like, you'll do fine. And she's like, just help the new person, you know, and I'm like, yeah, right on. Thanks. You know, helping the new person is what helps me so much. Like, I was supposed to pick up this guy from the Salvation Army today and take him, and I was hoping he would come, and he canceled. He had, you know, meet with his counselor, but, like, really, it's because, like, I wanted to hear what was going on with him. I care about others, but also it gets me out of my head. So, like, I don't have to think about myself constantly. And then, you know, so I'm calling people on the way up here so I don't think too much. Also, you know, I'm definitely an overthinker. You know, coming up here today, like, before I'm sitting over there, just like, what am I going to say? What is that? Okay. Where do I start? What do I do? I'm like, I don't remember that. Like, this is how my head plays out, and it's just insane. And, you know, right now, I know after I do this commitment, because I don't want to do this. You know, Glenn asked me, and I don't want to do this. You know, this is not comfortable for me. I don't know. But I know afterwards that once I'm done doing this, like, I'll feel great, and, like, I can hold my head high and give back for what AAA's done for me. Trying to think what else. So, you know, I finished the steps. Helping people has been big. Service work, prayer and meditation. Meditation's been a big part of my recovery. I try to spend 10 minutes a day in silence, and that's hard for someone with a head like me. Today, you know, doing that really helped calm me, kind of ground me to the present moment, because a lot of times I'm definitely not in the present moment. Like, I'm thinking about, you know, I'm thinking about tomorrow, I'm thinking about the speech being done with, I'm thinking about, you know, starting my new job, I'm thinking about having my next kid, I'm thinking about, you know, getting a dog, like, just the stuff that just goes on and on and on. It's so tiresome, you know. And when I was drinking, I mean, it would stop it, and that was great, but today I have to find a different solution, because alcohol did not work like it did that first time. It just got worse and worse, and the consequences were worse. It was progressive. My life was definitely unmanageable. So today, I try to live in the solution. I got people that I call regularly, and they really snap me out of where I'm at. And, you know, some of the gifts that I've given or got because of this program, and I know I wouldn't have these gifts, or I wouldn't be able to appreciate them like I do if it wasn't for recovery. Today I'm married. I got a wife that loves me and, you know, is always there for me. And we gave birth October 9, 2012 to a healthy little girl named Kate. And, you know, when I look at her, I'm like, thank you, God, so much. You know, when I came in here 6 years ago, I wouldn't know I would get a present like that. I didn't know what God had in store for me. You know, I didn't want anything to do with God. I grew up in a Catholic school, and, you know, I was like, God is not the solution for me. I don't know what is, but God is not the solution. And today, you know, I can be on my knees and just be like, thank you, God, so much. I can look at my girl laugh, and, you know, I know all is all right. It really brings me back to the present moment. You know, I've worked a few jobs in recovery. Haven't gotten fired for one yet. I start a new job in a few weeks, so I have a few weeks off. So there's, you know, I'm grateful right now that I'm not messed up, because during times like this, when I had a lot of down period, that's when I would get real crazy, and then I would go into the hard drugs. And I'd spend a lot of money, and I would do, you know, just the craziest things during these periods of time. And now I'm just like, oh, I'm just going to enjoy it. I'm going to go to meetings. I've been going to meetings daily during this time. I'm going to enjoy my baby girl, my wife, help out sometimes around the house. You know, go to the gym, just do things, hang out with you guys in the rooms. Like, at first, you know, I really struggled with finding friends. Because I thought all those people that I drank with were my good friends. And I'm like, how am I going to find friends now that I'm sober? And man, I, you guys are the same people that I used to drink with, but you're getting sober now. You know, just crazy as hell, just like me, you know. And I love it. I feel at home with you guys. So, you know, I look forward to just laughing and goofing around and just enjoying my time off before I start the new job. I don't really know, you know, where I'm going with this now. I don't want to make something up. I hate when people ramble down. I'm just like, stop, you know, cut it off. You know, but I just want to say that, you know, you guys have meant a lot to me, YPG, AA, and, you know, if it wasn't for you guys, I definitely wouldn't be sober. Thank you.